Hello, patrons. So you're not going to get much of a pre-show today because we had some last-minute technical issues leading up right to the show, but we are ready to go. Sarah is not on the mic that we would like her to be on, but we'll get there. So just hang in there, be supportive. Veronica's here, and we're going to do a show. All right? Here we go. I'm going to start the broadcast. Broadcast. Hey, everybody. So we're here. We're a little later than we expected, but we're here. And it's all new. So new that things are breaking.
I'm exactly the same.
Veronica's new. You've got like kind of a new, not a new shirt, maybe?
Nope.
No? Okay. Let me tweet that we are live. To start the show. So... ladies and gentlemen, Sarah Lane, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right.
Ready.
Let's make it happen. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. All right, that's the first technical error. I hit the wrong button. Let's start that over again, shall we? Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, October 2nd, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Veronica Belmont.
And this is the beginning of the new lineup of the show. Sarah Lane has joined us. Welcome, hooray. Sarah.
Hooray. I'm sorry if anyone thinks that my microphone sounds a little crappy. That's because the good one isn't working suddenly.
Yes. Sarah's
That's
microphone.
Podcasting.
Sarah's laptop decided to welcome us by not working.
It's okay. They always think my microphone sounds crappy.
Well, my microphone was perfectly fine before the show, and then just I don't know. Who knows?
Producer Roger Chang is here as well. How are you, Roger?
I am here. Yes, I'm yeah.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know. U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan ruled Saturday that the FBI does not need to reveal who unlocked an iPhone 5C for it or how much was paid for the service. Judge Chutkan ruled that the details are properly classified as national security secrets and the release could damage Apple's security.
Here's some good news for anybody who feels like the world's a little weird sometimes. That would be me. Two scientists have published a paper in Science Advances showing that attempts to use the quantum Monte Carlo method to model the quantum Hall effect requires exponential increases in computer power as the number of particles modeled rises. Now, if that doesn't make any sense to you, it didn't to me either. In layman's terms, this is being seen as proving that we don't, in fact, live in a simulation and this is all real.
Hooray! Yay.
How do we know that's not part of the simulation? Not buying it. Very clever, scientists. Moving on, the Wayfinder open standard for building audio instructions into apps to help blind people navigate has been accepted by the International Telecommunications Union, the ITU, as an official ITU standard. Trials are being conducted in London, Sydney, Oslo, and elsewhere with plans for trials in Barcelona in November.
That's a big step forward. That's fantastic.
That's great. Yeah. That's super awesome.
Now here are some more top stories. Google is changing a rule that boosted search rankings for news publishers who allowed views of 3 or more articles for free before sticking them behind a paywall. This was a workaround for a lot of people who are like, well, I don't want to pay for that subscription to the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times or whatever, so I'll just get one of them free links. Well, Google search engine will no longer take into account free or paid status for articles when determining search rank. Google is also developing a new revenue share model to integrate paid subscriptions into Google News. So suddenly Google playing nice with publishers.
I didn't like this at first, but now I kind of like that a little bit more because it feels like it's giving something back to the content creators in a pretty big way. So that's good. Though I did kind of like the idea that I was being somehow buffered, protected from paid services, so I wouldn't click on things that I otherwise probably would have gotten to and been like, oh!
And I have to say, it used to be cool that Google was saying, really, you know, the internet should be free and open because it's 1998. Still in our hearts. On the other hand, I always felt it was a little odd for a search engine to be throwing around its power. It was one of the early indications that Google had enough weight to make decisions for other people. And I think it's one of the things that rub publishers the wrong way. I'm not a big fan of paywalls. I don't think they necessarily work, but I'm a big fan of letting publishers decide if that's true for them, because paywalls make work great for particular publications, and they shouldn't be penalized in search rankings because of that.
All right, if you're a Roku owner, some good news, especially if you're thinking of upgrading, because Roku just announced updates to 5 of its streaming devices. The company's $50 streaming stick gets a 50% faster processor and support for voice control. That's nice. The $70 Roku Streaming Stick Plus now handles 4K, has better Wi-Fi range. The wireless module is built right into the cable, kind of handy. The $30 Roku Express and $40 Roku Express Plus both get faster processors, and the Express Plus keeps its composite port. Some people like those. The Roku Ultra model didn't actually change, but the price dropped from $130 to $100. You know, the holidays aren't far away now. Roku OS version 8 is now also available on all supported boxes, and it can handle over-the-air programming and add single sign-on too. I haven't used my Roku in quite some time. I'm kind of Apple TV these days.
Yes.
For a long time, back in the days where you could only get HBO Go on the Roku, I mean, it's still a great little device, and there are so many models now.
I use the Roku particularly for Amazon because Amazon doesn't still yet have its app for Apple TV. I have preferred the interface for Apple TV for a while, though, so I've been using it more and more myself. I love that they're integrating over the air, but it's not DVR, it's just over the air. And I don't watch a lot of over the air TV live. I use a TiVo to record it. If Roku had said, plug a USB drive in the back and you can now, you know, take advantage of a DVR capability, I'd be all over this.
That sounds like a future upgrade to me. Yeah, I don't use the Roku. I'm full on Apple TV at this point. I've been using PS View for television. Not a fan. Going to switch over pretty soon, I think, to another solution. And I realize why I'm mad about Star Trek. And this is a topic for a different day.
What? But I think that can you summarize, though? You've tantalized me.
Okay. I am upset because I feel like Star Trek should be for everyone. It basically like encouraged generations of kids to get into science and technology, and now it's behind a freaking paywall. And I think that's baloney.
So it should be free over the air or nothing?
Yeah, I think it should. It just makes me sad. It should be easy to watch. It's amazing.
Gotcha.
That's not a very good reason for like many people out there, and I don't care.
Don't feel that way about Netflix stuff, but you're saying Star Trek is different. So I don't know that I agree, but I respect
that. Star Trek to a different level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's my turn. Sony announced an update to the PSVR headset, including integrated headphones and support for HDR pass-through. Currently, the PSVR must be unplugged to see HDR content on the TV. No price or release date was announced.
Kind of a weird little upgrade where it's not going to work for you current PSVR users, but it's also not like a big enough thing where if I have a current PSVR headset, I'm going to want to replace it, right?
Right. Oh, I remembered one other thing I wanted to say. Amazon is coming to Apple TV, I think, late October. So I think it should be any week now.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. I too will believe it when I see it, but that's what they're saying.
It's the circle for me.
Net market share shows a rise in Linux desktop use from 2.5% in July to almost 5% in September. So not quite a doubling, but pretty close. It's right now very close to macOS market share. macOS market share use is about 6.29%, according to net market share. Now you're like, wait a minute, what does this mean? We're not talking about sales. We're talking about net market share, looking at the records of tens of thousands of websites, going over the page views and doing an analysis of saying, okay, these pages were generally accessed 97% of the time by this, 90% of the time by Windows, but 5% of the time by Linux. Basically, everybody thinks the reason is Chromebooks. There are Chromebooks all over schools these days. And with everybody going back to school in September, everybody opens up their new Chromebooks, lights them up. Chrome OS registers as Linux, and it shows up in net market share. What do y'all think? Nothing.
I got nothing on this one. Yeah, I mean, that's cool.
Well, it's interesting because it does say that, you know, contrary to conventional wisdom, Linux isn't this kind of DIY OS that only a selected knowledgeable few can, you know, use. And I think it does extend the argument that Linux can be commercially competitive as long as it's put in a much user in a little more user-friendly package or platform.
Yeah, and think about it. Linux is super successful now. It's Android, it's Chrome OS, but it's pretty much Google that is making it successful at the moment.
It actually sort of surprises me that the number is as high as it is, but you do make good points there, Tom.
Well, thank you, Sarah.
Well, you're welcome.
I think the bigger question, though, is if this percentage stays past a year. Right?
Yeah, like, we didn't see this kind of bump last year, but you can make an argument that, that it took a while for Google to really penetrate schools with Chrome OS, and so now you're finally seeing it. But Roger, you're absolutely right. Will we see this kind of decline and bump in the summer and then return to school next year? That'll be very telling.
All right, moving on. Some Facebook news. Facebook shared 3,000 ads, a lot of ads, with U.S. congressional investigators that were bought by a Russian company to influence U.S. politics. Yes, the company also said it's going to be making some changes. It's going to change its advertising systems to cut down on abuse and election interference. CEO Mark Zuckerberg promised that that was going to happen last week, and they're making steps now. Facebook is also hiring 1,000 more people to its global ads review team over the next year, and will also allow anybody to see any ad run by any organization on the social network instead of only the ads specifically targeted to us.
These are all fine. I actually really like the idea of being able to click on an advertiser and see, well, what else are you running? Some have made the argument this could be a chilling effect for small businesses who might be trying out language to see what language is right, and it's embarrassing to see the stuff they're trying out because some of it might not be very good. That's why they're trying it out, because they don't know yet. Overall, though, I think it's kind of fun to be able to get that look behind the curtain. I still am waiting for someone to give us evidence that any of these ads have had an effect, because what Zuckerberg is doing and what Facebook is doing is in reaction to public opinion, not evidence. I'm not saying it didn't have an effect or it did, but nobody has stopped to actually assess that.
Well, isn't that what they're trying to do?
No, they're trying to figure out how to stop these kinds of ads from being done in the future. But honestly, all that's going to do is stop ads that are like these. If these didn't have an effect, that's not going to do anything. If they did have an effect, we don't know why, and so we wouldn't be able to stop other kinds of ads.
Yeah. It would be more interesting, I think, to look into the research around the articles and shares that people are putting on their timeline to see how that kind of echo chamber effect has an impact on the political landscape.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are doing that research, but I don't know if we have anything thoroughly convincing yet. I think it definitely does help solidify ideas that you're already tied into and kind of give your own, you know, your own personal biases more strength. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. The only study I've seen showed that it didn't have much of an effect.
These sorts of things, when you hear, you know, someone like Mark Zuckerberg say, we're going to hire 1,000 fresh eyes to make this process better. It's like, that sounds like a lot, but you know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, that seems like a step in the right direction. Zuckerberg has also come under quite a bit of criticism for, you know, harboring sort of dangerous information on Facebook, or certainly manipulative information. So it would be nice to know the breakdown of what these new people are going to be doing. You know, was the review team just not staffed up properly to begin with? Is this going to fix it? Sometimes this all sounds a little bit like lip service until people sort of forget and move on to the next thing. But I will try to be optimistic.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so strident about, wait, let's find out what the problem is before we fix it, because that will make sure that we're not just doing PR, right? Facebook is definitely doing PR here. They're saying, like, you guys are mad about this, so we're going to do something. Whether that something will actually fix anything or not, it's actually not only we don't know, but it's hard to evaluate because we haven't properly assessed the problem. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to our other show, Daily Tech Headlines, at dailytechheadlines.com. It gets you everything you need to know each day in 5 minutes or so. Veronica Belmont is a daily listener, so you could be listening to it on your Amazon Echo and say, oh, I'm listening to this along with Veronica.
At the same time, maybe, yeah. Even.
It's so pleasant to think about.
And then I sing the Somewhere Out There song from Five Will Goes West. And think about those Daily Tech Headlines together beneath the pale moonlight.
So add it to your Amazon Echo. You can add it to your Anchor app, or you can go get it as a podcast at dailytechheadlines.com. And that's a look at our top stories. All right. BBC article caught my eye this morning. Professor Chris Reed of the University of Dundee wrote an article about training computers to argue, which would put Roger Chang and I out of a job for our East Meets West podcast.
Yeah. But luckily he doesn't pay us, so.
No, that's true. It's called argument technology, and it's not exactly what you want to think when you're about to make the joke you're about to make. The aim is not to help humans argue with each other and win. The aim is to help people make better decisions. So they're trying to get AI to be able to challenge evidence, examine alternatives, draw proper conclusions. AI will need to learn how to understand social rules, emotional sensitivities, practical constraints, and that's what they're working on. You know, we hear a lot about playing Go and being trained to recognize cats and everything. This is the next trend, one of the next trends in artificial intelligence is this kind of argument technology. At the University of Dundee, they're actually using classical rhetoric theories to help spot the structures of arguments to train these AI. And they think they can be useful in two ways. One, justifying and explaining. So just going out there and finding reasons why you could be pro or con on an issue. IBM's working on something for a couple of years now called the Debater that Watson employs. And then there's dialogue games. So think Plato's Socratic dialogue, or even on a simpler level, your child going, why? Why? That's kind of a dialogue game. And that can help you avoid unconscious biases, weak evidence, and poorly thought through arguments. This is fascinating to me.
Go ahead.
Article, when it, you know, as I was reading it, I was sort of like, okay, what are we talking about exactly? And once this BBC article mentioned a court of law, for example, then I was like, okay, I get it. You know, this is not necessarily that robots are going to replace a jury anytime soon, but that human bias that is inherently has to be factored into decisions like, okay, with all the facts that have been presented, what is the most reasonable outcome? It makes the whole thing very interesting because I think that you can, I mean, you obviously, humans have to train the AI to begin with, but if you can somehow filter out some of the problems that happen with humans and emotions and, you know, somebody's having a bad day or just bad at arguing, it actually makes the potentials here really interesting. I don't know.
You know what would be fun? It'd be cool if, like, if you were in a courtroom and you could have something like Statcast or whatever MLB uses to train their umpires, like, you know, because after every baseball game, an umpire watches their calls to make sure that they made the right call. A lawyer could go back and the AI could say, like, this would have been the right question to ask, or this would have been the right argument to have, to actually train people to kind of get past their biases and learn from maybe the mistakes that they've made in previous cases based on a totally objective perspective from the artificial intelligence. That would be really cool. Train people to be better lawyers.
Lawcast. You can watch it in real time on Court TV. Court TV doesn't even exist anymore. It's called something else now. But
Court TV. Gosh, I used to love Court TV.
I know, everything goes away.
Sort of on the subject, it's sort of related. Yesterday, I was all fired up about politics, as you know, it happens sometimes.
You're the only one. Like, no one else is.
Right. I know. It's just this kind of unique thing that I do. But I started to argue with someone on Twitter. I was just in a mood, you know, and we're going back and forth a little bit. And, you know, I keep feeling like he's dodging my questions. And finally, a friend of mine DMs me and he's like, you are arguing with a Russian bot right now. That's not working.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I went back, I realized, oh, yeah, this account is responding to keywords of mine, but not actually talking to me. And then it was really obvious and I felt really stupid, but also just sort of illustrates how far the technology
the bots have gone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty easy to build a Twitter bot like that these days, actually. It's kind of frightening.
I was duped.
Yeah, it's super easy. I don't blame you. It's harder sometimes maybe in live chat, but the Twitter conversations, they really do an amazing job.
Well, and because people kind of respond out of context a lot of times on Twitter anyway. So it's harder to spot that sort of Turing test gap that you would in a live conversation.
Yeah.
The argument technology that we're talking about here, though, really is about assisting rather than mimicking. Now, we could have a whole side conversation about what happens when the guy who made that Russian bot Sarah was arguing with gets a hold of this too, eventually. But for now, it's, you know, things like couples mediation, or if a boardroom is debating an issue, argument technology could present issues and show arguments. The 2014 video that we'll have in the show notes of Watson doing this is really fascinating because they put just the topic, do video games cause violence in children? And Watson just went out to Wikipedia, looked through the articles, and within a minute was like, here are all the pros, here are all the cons. Make up your mind.
I love that.
I wonder if you can use argument technology and like self-driving car technology as well, you know?
Oh, so you could have a backseat driver argument.
Or like, should I kill the five people in the road or should I drive myself off the cliff?
For the trolley.
Cable car.
For the trolley.
Yeah, the trolley. Yeah. Cable car. Well, I'm so San Francisco that I call it the cable
car. Yeah, in San Francisco, it's called a cable car problem. That's true.
Yeah, it's like, let's remove the human bias from this equation and just figure out who we're supposed to kill.
Roger, you wanted to say something. What was it?
Well, this would be great for negotiating anything, whether it's like a real estate deal or like even between governments, like free trade deals, right? You would have a list of things and you could literally simulate what the logical conclusions or set of conclusions are, reducing a huge, humongous, you know, response to maybe three or four things, and then just coming up with, well, if they do A, B, or C, we'll have a response. You know, it's like, oh, we'll give them dairy or we'll give them lumber, we'll give them automotive.
I imagine that's a different specialty than this, than argument technology, but certainly overlaps quite a bit. I'm curious if anybody out there doing AI research knows, is there a specific discipline for negotiation intelligence?
Well, yeah, actually, that's what caused the Facebook bots to have their first big argument and kind of veer off into AI speak land that freaked everyone out. That was actually I believe that was a mediation or a bargaining of some kind bot, or they were trying to figure out how to get it to, what was it, negotiate? It was a negotiation piece of software, I believe. And so they were trying to get the bots to negotiate for like better prices on something, if I'm remembering correctly, and the bots just created their own shorthand for talking to each other that was far more efficient.
That's why that sticks in my head, because they were trying to do negotiation with each other.
Right.
They were using that. Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, oh, it's just like how people talk on like the floor of the stock exchange. Like they have their own hand signals and shorthand and terms that they use. The bots did the same thing and invented their own language. And so the researchers turned it off because they're like, well, we don't understand what they're saying anymore. So this isn't valuable to us. It wasn't like, oh my God, we're terrified they're going to take over the world. It was like, okay, well, we can't derive any value from this right now because we can't understand them.
But it's true. Like all of this kind of thing can play into advising, and it's certainly worth talking about fears and replacement and automation and the kinds of thing that Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking are warning about. Those are worth discussing and paying attention to. But a lot of the use of this can be in advice and advising, and I think that's another good possibility for it. Hey, thanks to everybody who. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, more information, better ways to make decisions as humans is always valuable. Yeah. You know, we have so much data input every day. Being able to have something that can look at that data objectively and pull out meaning from it would be amazing.
Yeah, and say, like, here are the things you're missing. I don't have a stake in this argument because I'm a bot. You look at it and decide what you think.
Totally.
Hey, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and facebook.com/groups/Daily Tech News Show. Get in there and prove you're not a bot. Let's head over across the pond and check in with Nate Langson. Find out what's going on with text message, Nate.
Hey, thanks, Tom. This week, we've gone deep on how the UK is having to respond to Uber's ban from London. There's a lot to discuss here, as you can imagine, as local press have been blanket covering this topic. So do give us a listen for the latest there. Plus, we've got a special feature this week on quite a controversial topic, actually. One of my good friends, Olivia Solon, who's a reporter for The Guardian, ended up being the news this week after Instagram inadvertently used a screenshot of one of her threats of sexual violence from an internet troll as an advert to her friends on Facebook. It's a bit of a chilling story, but it is well worth a listen. That's out now on episode 106 of Text Message, available at techpodcast.uk or in your local podcatcher. Just search TECH apostrophe S message 106. Back to you. And hey, see you in a week.
Oh, yeah. I'll see you. Yeah. It's even less than a week. I'll see you Friday, Nate. Nate's getting married this weekend. That's one of the reasons I'm in England. So congratulations to Nate.
It's the wedding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
I know. Ian Morris will be in the wedding. So it'll be like a little text message wedding there. But yeah, definitely check out this week's episode for that interview, because she has a very interesting perspective on why this happened, what it doesn't mean, as well as what it does mean, and how she felt about her own publication interviewing her for the story. Check it out at techpodcast.uk. All right, let's get to our messages of the day. TG Stellar, in one last hot day of summer in North Jersey, wrote us this email. Hey, Tom et al. If I watched DTNS Live, I would have asked this of your guest, Keith Townsend, at the time. Is IT hard for the Equifaxes of the world because the Googles of the world attract the best IT talent, leaving less talented resources for the rest? I wonder if this is the third part of a negative tech trinity. Executives who don't want to pay for IT security, employees who don't know how to follow IT security best practices. You know, we've always said that the employees are always the weakest link in any security, and a limited pool of IT talent to implement the solutions. What do you guys think? Is it possible that we're just not, you know, that these companies suffer, not just Equifax, because I think they've gone above and beyond, but we keep hearing, you know, Target and then Home Depot a long time ago, and just over and over and over again.
I think it would be easy to say, of course, there's lots of IT pros who are like, I want to work at Google, or, you know, some sort of exciting up and coming company. I guess that's not really Google anymore, but, you know, the kind of Silicon Valleys of the IT world, sort of the rock star jobs. I also think it has a lot to do with geography and where people live. And, you know, if you want to work at Google, but for whatever reason you want to live in an area where Google's not going to let you work remote and there's not a hub there, you might take an IT job, which is in your skill set, at a company that wouldn't be your first choice. Or I think it would be wrong to say that, oh, there's security problems at companies that aren't what we think about the forefront of technology just because those jobs have less skilled people.
Yeah, I totally disagree with the lack of IT talent. I think the IT talent worldwide is not at all limited to within the confines of the Googleplex. You know, I think, or Silicon Valley for that matter. I think really what it is a problem of motivation. I think that the people who are doing these, you know, illegal hacks are just extremely motivated to do so. And so they just have the, you know, whether it's monetary reasons or whether it's status reasons, you know, sometimes they come from countries where this is the best way to make a buck, the easiest or easiest for them way. So it's, you know, I think it's, for me, there are a lot of big IT companies that just have their seven-headed hydra that don't have the conversations they need to have amidst their groups, or they're not doing the right updates. You know, I don't know. I really don't think it's a lack of talent. I think it's just there's a lot of technology involved and a lot of people who are extremely motivated to find those cracks in the systems.
I chalk it up to a culture of, especially in certain businesses where you have done things in a certain manner for decades. You know, it's not that it isn't important, but it just isn't on the radar in the same way through, you know, how they talk about institutions having a level of memory or kind of a a thought process. It's institutional. I mean, it's something that needs to kind of shake through, especially with really large, especially financial institutions, where there's just, you know, that like what Veronica was saying, a seven-headed hydra, where there's, you know, like, well, our acquisitions is more important. You know, our ability to underwrite these policies is more important. And all these other things they don't think about because they don't see it, how it compounds the issue if it does break.
And you know what? We talk about legacy systems and legacy software all the time. How about legacy people or legacy process? Mm. Because at some of these big companies, like, they just have a way of doing things. And even though they're hiring some of the top talent, the ability to make those new ideas or new process trickle up into the company and actually make it work. So like, they could have systems in place that have been around for 15 years. And there's one guy that really likes it that way. And he's the head of IT. And these new upstart kids with all their new smart ideas come in and try to get them to change their mind and do something new or update this system or that system. And they're like, no, we'll get around to it when we have the time, when we have the bandwidth, when we have the resources. And it just doesn't get done.
I have never run into a situation where someone told me the problem that we had with this breach was because we didn't have the right talented people. No, it's always something like what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, and we told them.
Our buddy, IT Pro Keith, who was on the show recently, was actually kind of walking us through how these things happen, where there might be a security risk and everyone knows it. But in order to fix that, it means that productivity and or profits might take a dip, and so everyone says, "Yeah, let's do it tomorrow."
Yeah, no, it's that part of the tech trinity. I think that really is the bigger part of it. Tech trinity, as T.G. Steller called it in his email. But thank you for that email, T.G. Steller. Good to think about. Good question to make. Sarah, wrap us up with the last email.
Got another email from Anthony in what he calls chilly but beautiful Alaska. That sounds about right. He says, in case this comes up in a story, I just want to add a personal testimony. The Apple Watch Series 3 is more sensitive to tattoo interference than the Series 0. I played with it over the past few days. I've experienced issues with it locking while I'm wearing it, not tracking standing time or my heart rate or sleep information, and then not unlocking when I unlock my phone. So I called Apple. They gave me the suggestion that the faster processor might be the culprit. That was their words, not Anthony's. And after 2 years of wearing the Series 0, I'd never experienced a single known issue with my tattoo. 1 week with the Series 3 on the same wrist, same tattoo. I've missed the phone ringing several times.
Have you tried removing your tattoo and reinstalling it?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Problem.
Yeah.
Something I never would have thought about.
Thank you, Anthony, for the report.
I never would have thought of that either.
Yeah.
Huh, my tattoo's on my right arm, but it's not in the place where the watch connects. So
wait till you try Project Jacquard. It's gonna.
I mean, is that? Yeah, I wouldn't have even thought about that. That's crazy.
Might slide it up and do some A/B testing.
Will yeah.
You? Yeah, or I could wear it backwards
arm for. Watch. Yeah. Well, special thanks to Andrew Bradley. Before we get out of here, he sent us a big box of Transformers Masterpiece Edition figures that Roger is showing off right there because he just didn't need them anymore, and it was very nice of him. So Roger has taken custody of them and has them ready to go. Thank you again, Andrew, for sending those along, and thank you, Veronica Belmont, as always, for joining us. Anything to tell folks about this week?
Oh, we are recording season 2 of IRL. My first interview is tomorrow morning, so I'm very excited to get the show back on the air. I mean, it wasn't a very long hiatus. It's been like, I don't know, a month and a half maybe. But we've got some great story ideas for season 2, a lot of great interviews coming up, and I'm real excited about it.
Excellent.
Because it's one of my favorite podcasts to listen to.
Yay, that makes me so happy to hear. And also, I watched the Transformers most recent movie this weekend. Oh boy, was that a stinker. That was a stinker. It was fun. It was something, but it was a stinker. No offense.
Not certified fresh by Veronica Bowman. Go check it out, irlpodcast.org. Huge thanks to all the patrons who are supporting the show and giving us a chance to start things off with Sarah Lane on the show every day. Her mic will get better, we promise. That was just
I'm furious.
You don't know how mad Sarah is right now.
On day one, everything was okay. And then we just a little tweaking before the show and we'll figure it out.
We
but
will.
Yeah, bear with us. Hopefully anybody who's at least watching the video version of the show likes what I've done with the place.
Yeah, it looks really good. And I've got a new background as well.
Coming tomorrow and yeah, there's we'll call it, it's version 1.5 at this point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're going onward and upward from here, but huge, huge thanks to everyone who supports the show. I hope you've enjoyed the brand new perks. The advisor level people got their Len Peralta art this week, and all of the Slack invites went out to the new analysts and everything. So check it out, patreon.com/DTNS. Don't forget Friday, October 6th, Justin Robert Young hosting an episode of DTNS Live at LA Podfest. You do need to pay to attend LA Podfest. That's out of our control. It's part of that. But if you are going to go to LA Podfest, check it out. Special guest Darren Kitchen, Jeff Cannata, and Allison Sheridan will be there.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 2030 UTC, at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. Of course, our website is dailytechnewsshow.com.
Folks, be kind to each other. Do something to make the world better today. We'll be back tomorrow with Patrick Beja and Rob Reed. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
ICU said the nicest thing in chat. Sarah Lane trumps fidelity. Meaning audio fidelity.
That.
She's still troubleshooting. All right. That was a good show, you guys.
Oh, that was a great show, regardless of the audio issues. It was actually really good. It moved.
Despite the impediments, the obstacles, we overcame. What should we call it?
As we always do as humans, we overcome. Let's see.
What do they got? Showbot.tv. We're not living in a simulation.
I would say we're not living in a simulation, or are we?
We're not living in a simulation. What if you just put a
question mark at the end of it? So we're not living in a simulation?
Simulation?
We also have Make Star Trek Free, courtesy of Veronica, and Zoe Brings Bacon. We're Really Real, Google 1984, The Beard and the Blonde.
Roku. What about Make Star Trek Free Again?
That's your personal crusade.
Paramount would like that. Paramount, like, no.
Get the joke. Get the joke. It's also a political joke. It's also political.
It can't be too political. Then it becomes an insult. Wait, what? Rokuing the boat. like arguing with a Russian bot. I argued once with a Russian cabbie. I'm not sure it's the same thing. Mm. I think therefore I am.
You're on a roll today, Roger. What? Your jokes are funny.
I know. am AI America. BOL plus TNT equals DTNS.
Ah.
It's a chemical equasion. That adds up. Into the Great Wide Open? Is this the real life?
Oh, that's sad. Into the Great Wide Open. Because you guys heard Tom Petty died, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. I thought you were talking to the audience.
Yeah, it was. Into the Great Wide Open is a Tom Petty song. I just didn't want people to think we did not.
Maybe I should drive down Reseda. Together Again for the First Time. Google, Tear Down This Wall. Another Google on the wall. Yeah, I guess. Starfleet, tear down that wall. Boldly go where no one is willing to pay. Yes. Yes. They just need to tack on some really compelling stuff besides that one show. 2017, the year of the Linux desktop, eventually. So it's a side note. That used to be a joke for networking, right? It's the year of the year of the networks for like from 93 to 97. It was the year of the network. Facebook adds more to combat misinformation. Oh, to combat information. Argument intelligence. You call that a university? This is a university.
You're just reading them, though. Tell, which ones do you like?
Roger is here. Quantum. No. I would like We're Not Living in a Simulation, but with a question mark.
Okay.
We're not living in a simulation.
Down.
We're alive, really, really alive.
I also like to boldly go behind a paywall.
That's pretty clever.
I hesitate to make the title about Star Trek because we don't actually talk about it for very long.
No. In fact, I just brought it up apropos of nothing.
I know.
Computer out-argues people.
I feel like disagree. It's a little bit, because people are so fired up about that, they're like, well, I'm going to watch this show because they're going to talk about this, and then they might get disappointed.
Yeah, I get you.
How about Star Trek? We don't talk about it very long, so don't get disappointed.
I don't know if that's compelling reason to listen.
How about this one? No, how about the one from Ken from Chicago? Computer out-argues people, comma, people disagree.
I thought we're not living in a simulation was what we were going with.
Yeah, it's good.
That, yeah. No, yeah, I'm just giving
you. All right, just giving options. Like, I like it.
I think
we're good with that one.
I won't rotate the tires.
Oh, no, rotate the tires. I don't want them to get bald on one side.
Bald on one side.
Can
like
you rotate my head?
I can sure as heck polish it out with a buffer.
That'll buff out your hair.
Apple Watch is anti-tattoo. I wonder what the deal is. Is it the ink?
I bet it's the depth. It's a little bit bigger. This is just a guess. I bet, but because it's a tiny bit thicker, I bet it's angling the sensor different than it used to.
Hmm. Just remember me that story about that woman in Canada who got her eyeball tattooed.
Oh, God, what? Really?
I don't like to think about it.
Why does this remind you of that? Because it's not about an eye thing. She's not going to wear that watch on her face.
Eventually, they'll be on her faces. Yeah, there'll be eye patches. The eye patch.
That's funny, Roger.
That'd be pretty cool because you can flip it. It could be like a monocle. It could be either side.
Roger's getting all your that's funnies today.
That's because he's trying.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you saying effort kneecaps the funniness?
No, I'm saying effort actually is paying off.
So what you're saying is I need to apply myself.
Not anymore.
Well, you're already applying yourself. You're doing
great.
Saying
you have a hard time taking a compliment.
We're just
saying
Tom isn't being good at being funny.
No.
He's not trying hard
enough. No, exactly.
Tom, how long have you known me?
How long have I known you? Just over 18 years.
I've known you, what, like
18 years and 1 month.
6 months longer than your wife, right? I would say, safe to say.
You have known me exactly 4 months longer than my wife has known me.
4 months.
Yeah. Because I met you in September of 1999. I met her in January of 2000.
Yeah, it didn't work out between us, so he went with his wife instead.
It's okay.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens.
AI McBeal.
Well, I have outlived my conference room time.
All right.
So I should hit the road, Jack.
Thanks, V.
But thank you, guys. I'll see you later.
All right.
Have a good day. Goodbye.
You too.
Sarah's in troubleshooting land, I can tell. I think she's rebooted.
Oh. She was very still.
Yeah, she's not just crouched. She hasn't just been crouched down for the past 15 minutes. Well, it's not technically what we wanted for the first show of this of October, but it was good content.
It was a really good show.
Yeah.
I mean, despite the audio issues, it really came through as a really really nice pace. Honestly, the pacing is really good.
Yeah. Well, we will try it again tomorrow. Thanks everybody for watching or listening, and we'll be back with, like I said, Patrick Beja and Rob Reed, along with Sarah again tomorrow. Talk to you then.